What a privilege to be part of this class. I just can't get over it. And after the blessings this morning, we could go home and say we had a wonderful class. Thank you so much. We have a person in our class who is quite a scholar, who is a member of the class. He and his wife are members. His name is Mark Dumdye. I don't know if you know him or not. His vocation is finances, but he spends more time studying the scriptures. He's skilled in languages, Greek and Hebrew. He works a lot with Greek manuscripts, particularly papyrus manuscripts, which go back to the 2nd and 3rd centuries, basically. He's done a lot of research on, or a certain amount of research on, the date of Christ's birth. I've not studied that in detail, and he has. So I asked if he could, in 10 minutes, defend December 25 as the birth of Christ. I don't know if he can or not, but Mark, come on up. We're delighted to have you here, and I'm giving you 10 minutes of my precious time so that you can...
Thank you, Mark. Merry Christmas, everyone. Some of you did receive a handout. I only produced about 80 of them before I came here this morning, but I'm going to look at the question, as Jesus said, I am the fulfillment of the law and the prophets. And most of us know how we fulfill the prophets with regard to the Passover. Because the first Passover, you might recall that the Lord commanded through Moses that they would take the blood of the lamb and they would put it on the two lintels and on the top of the doorpost, which formed the sign of the cross. And when the angel of death passed over those homes, it saw the sign of the cross, or the blood. Those people lived, and Jesus fulfilled that on the cross. But what about his birth? I mean, Jesus was crucified on a very significant day. He was crucified on Passover. What was important about the day that Jesus was born? Because we go December 25th. In fact, there are a lot of people out there who would say December 25th is just a made-up day. It co-opts a pagan holiday called Sol Invictus, the victory of the sun. The day is getting longer. Actually, it's a very minor Roman holiday. It wasn't even instituted until the days of the Emperor Aurelian in the 3rd century. The lengthening of the days of the sun began to occur on December 22nd, not on December 25th. A lot of people would say, by the way, you know, the shepherds could not be in the fields. It's too cold out there in December. Do you realize that Jerusalem is as far south as Waco, Texas? And what's the weather going to be like tomorrow? About 70 degrees. You know, you are a shepherd and you have two choices. You can feed the livestock in the mangers, or you can, and baling hay or whatever you can bale, or you can take them out to the field. Do the math, okay. We know what the shepherds would do on a warm day, because we have unseasonably warm days, not only in Waco, Texas, but also in Jerusalem. Now, how do we know what day Jesus was actually born? Well, we don't have one place in the Bible where we open it up and we say December 25th, using the parlance of the Gregorian calendar. Actually, you have to put it together from a number of sources. And those sources come from 4 different places. We have to put them all together. It's like a puzzle. And the first source is just the Roman histories. And it tells us a little bit of information how we can develop our timelines. There was 2 very important days in Roman history. The most important day was the day of the Battle of Actium. Chuck mentioned this morning. It was the day that Octavian, later to be Augustus Caesar, defeated the forces of Antony and Cleopatra, and in so doing became the sole ruler of the Roman Empire. Okay, and that occurred on September 1st of 31 BC. The other day, by the way, that we have a specific date for is the day the Temple of Jerusalem was burned down. It was destroyed by the Emperor Titus, and that occurred on August 5th of 70 AD, and you go, well, so what? Okay, that really doesn't get us very close to the day that Jesus was born. Well, there's some things we have from the great Jewish historian, Flavius Josephus. He was born about 35 AD, and he wrote 2 great histories. One was the Wars of the Jews. He actually sided with the Romans in the latter part of the Jewish rebellion, which began in 66, but he was a Roman officer by the time the war was over, and for which reason he curried the favor of the Roman Emperor Titus. And he wrote his first history just a few years later in 75 AD, and he wrote his second history in 93 called The Antiquities of the Jews, and we can consult these books. In fact, from these books we're able to establish most chronologies about the life and times of Jesus. And finally, we also have the Babylonian Talmud. The Talmud gives us some other information that allows us to fix the dates of when these events occurred. So it's not in one place. You've got to be looking at stuff that most Christians have never looked at. Okay, so what's the first significant date? Well, we know from the Bible that Jesus was born during the reign of King Herod the Great. Okay, well, when was King Herod the Great reigning in power? Well, again, we look at the histories, and we find from Josephus that Herod was in the seventh year of his reign when the Battle of Actium was fought. Josephus, unfortunately, doesn't give us very many days either. Okay, but the seventh year of Herod's reign, meaning he began to reign in 37 B.C. This was a bloodthirsty king. He murdered his wife. He murdered his stepson. He murdered his in-laws. He even murdered his own sons eventually. So, you know, ordering the deaths of infants in Bethlehem, this is chicken feed stuff for a guy who murdered other people of royal blood, his own issue. So Herod began to reign in 37, and Josephus tells us he reigned for 34 years, which means he died in 3 B.C. Okay. We also know from the Roman histories that the Romans took over the province of Judea in 6 A.D., and Josephus also tells us in the Wars of the Jews that Archelaus, who succeeded Herod as king over the province of Judea, was ruling in his ninth year. Understand, ordinal numbers means he was already king for 8 years and in his ninth year. Okay, so we can fix the date of Herod's death pretty reliably to 3 B.C. Another thing we know from the gospel is that Herod thought Jesus could be as old as 2 when he ordered the deaths of the infants. Okay, so that's a little piece of the puzzle we now begin to fit together. But this still doesn't give us December 25th. The only thing we could say is Jesus was probably born somewhere in 4 or 5 B.C. Now people go, wait a minute. B.C., that means before Christ. And A.D. is Anno Domini from the Latin, the year of our Lord. How do we get that? Well, there was a Roman monk named Dionysius Exiguus, and he got his calculations a little bit off when he established the Christian calendar. Did that in the 5th century. So actually, the year Jesus was born, what we would call 5 B.C., and I'm going to show you how we arrive at that. Now we're going to go back to the Talmud for a moment. And it says in the Talmud that when the temple was destroyed by the Romans, that the order of Jehoiarib was serving on duty. And you go, okay, what does that have to do with anything? Well, in the Bible, it tells us that there were 24 priestly courses who served throughout the year, and they each served for 1 week. Okay, so they would serve twice a year, sometimes 3, because after all, every 24 weeks they would come up to serve again. Now, in the Gospel of Luke, chapter 1, verse 5, it says that Zechariah, Angel Gabriel appears to him at the altar in the temple while he was burning incense. He was of the 8th order. He was of the order of Abijah. Well, now, if we begin to calculate backwards, Jehoiarib was the first order. And we can calculate back and find out when the order of Abijah was serving at any point in history. What's really interesting is that the order of Abijah was serving at the time of Yom Kippur, the Feast of Tabernacles, in 6 B.C., okay, the 8th order. That was the Feast of Tabernacles, a time of the fall harvest, a time to rejoice the bounty that God had given to the people of Israel. And Zechariah had no bounty. He had no children. So this must have been a very cruel irony to him. But at the same time, the angel's coming to say, you who are burning incense in the Holy of Holies, by this time next year, you're going to have a son. And he's going, whoa, how do I know this is going to be true? And he strikes him mute when he asks the question. Okay. Now, we also know from the Gospel of Luke that when the angel appeared to Mary, he says, your cousin Elizabeth is in her 6th month. Okay, so we're going to mark forward about 6 months. And we arrive somewhere in February or March. Because you see, if Zechariah was serving in the temple between September 26th and October 2nd of 6 B.C., then we're now arriving in the month of March of 5 B.C. Okay. Now, that's, by the way, a very theologically significant event. I mean, you think about it again. God doesn't do things by accident, does he? He picked a very specific day for Jesus to die, not some random day picked out of the air for Jesus to be born. Okay. Because we're still saying, what's December 25th? Why is it important? Okay. So the angel Gabriel appears to Mary in the sixth month. An interesting thing about the Jewish calendar is they, like the Muslims, use a lunar calendar. Cycles of the moon are 29 and a half days approximately. And so the lunar year for the Jews also tends to float a little bit, but they make one correction that Muhammad prohibited, and that is in the month, what we would call February, Adar, if the spring planting is going to occur too early, they repeat the sixth month. Okay? And that occurred, by the way, on March 9th of 5 BC. So we actually have a 59-day month, which occurs in the middle of winter. And so the angel Gabriel appears to her somewhere between February and March. But when we say Elizabeth's been pregnant for 5 months going on six, okay, they were talking about sometime in March. So now we start rolling the clock forward 9 months, and where do we arrive? We arrive in December, don't we? Okay, so what is significant about December? Well, you had a presentation about Hanukkah. There's something very important about Hanukkah, and I hope I'm not repeating it too much. But Hanukkah was instituted in 167 BC. In fact, Jesus attended Hanukkah in the Gospels, Gospel of John, chapter 10, verse 32. It's called the Feast of Dedication. And what had happened is that the emperor of the Greeks, Antiochus Epiphanes, had defiled the temple. In fact, he had put up a pagan altar in it on the holy altar. And so when Judas Maccabeus and his band had liberated the temple from Greek control, they tore down the old altar of sacrifice, completely destroyed it, removed all the stones, they purified the whole place, and they erected a new altar of sacrifice. And this is found, by the way, for some of you who have Greek Orthodox and Catholic Bibles, in the book of Maccabees. And so they took unhewn stones, as the law directs, I'm reading from chapter 4, and built a new altar like the former one. They also rebuilt the sanctuary in the interior of the temple, and they consecrated the courts. Early in the morning on the 25th day of the ninth month, which is the month of Kislev, understand the Jewish year sometimes was calculated according to the month of Nisan, which would be the first month, or according to the month of Sivan, which would be the first month in the fall. They actually had two calendars going on. Here we're referring to the religious calendar. The ninth month, they arose and offered sacrifices, the law directs, on the new altar of burnt offering that they had built. All the people fell on their faces, worshipped and blessed heaven who had prospered them. So they celebrated the dedication of the altar for 8 days and joyfully offered burnt offerings. They offered a sacrifice of well-being and thanksgiving offering. They decorated the front of the temple with golden crowns and small shields. And also, by the way, in the second book of Maccabees says, with greenery. Okay, so Christmas trees are not just a pagan event. Something the Jews did at Hanukkah. Okay, they would celebrate with greenery. Now then, we go back to the Talmud. And in one other book of the Talmud, it tells us that when they had dedicated the temple, they only had enough oil to burn for 1 day. Okay, that's all they had enough. And yet they were going to do this for 8 days. And so there was no more oil for the lamps in the temple. There are no windows in there, by the way. Okay, there's no windows inside the temple at all. But the lamps continued to burn for 7 more days. Who provided the oil on the second day? The Lord did. The Lord provided a divine light which continued to burn for 7 more days. Now let's look at what the gospel says. We don't often look at the Gospel of John as a nativity, but Chuck preached from it 2 weeks ago. And you know, John talks about Jesus, and he was the light shining in darkness, and the darkness seized it not. And it went on beyond that point and said, he was in the world, and the world came into being through him, and the world knew him not. He came to his own, and they accepted him not. But in verse 9, he says, he was the true light coming into the world, which enlightens every man. Now, the image of light appears throughout the gospel when it comes to Jesus. We were looking at the Gospel of Luke this morning. And the shepherds are in the field, and the angel appears to them. But what's surrounding the angel? And the glory of the Lord shone around the angel when he announced the good tidings of peace on earth and goodwill to all men. Okay. Image of the light. When the Magi came almost 2 years later to pay homage and to worship Jesus, they followed what appeared to be a star. But if anyone knows geography, Jerusalem is north of Bethlehem. And when you look in the night sky, no star ever goes from north to south. They always go from east to west. And this star, by the way, stood in place over where Jesus was born, where Jesus was at that particular time. Stars don't stop moving in the night. I mean, there are various theories out there that says this was a grand conjunction of the planets Venus and Jupiter. By the way, the planet Venus never appears directly overhead because it's closer to the sun than the earth. Okay, this was a divine light. It was not a natural phenomenon. It was not a supernova. It was not planets. But just as the angel was surrounded by light, there was this extraordinary divine light that was in the sky, that was over the place where Jesus was in the house when the Magi came. So when we look at what is the theological significance of Jesus being born on December 25th, here's the good part. The second day of Hanukkah in 5 BC was December 25th on the Jewish calendar. That was the day of the miracle light. The day the miracle light of Jesus Christ came into the world, fulfilling all the law and the prophets, even the later law of the Maccabees, that Jesus was the light of mankind. And so it was. And that's why when we look at the historical facts, we can place when the angel appeared to John Baptist's father, Zechariah. And we can place it according to then when the angel appeared to Mary. And we mark 9 months forward. And guess what? We arrive at the second day of Hanukkah, the day God provided the light as he provided us his son. And that's my blessing to you this morning.
Thank you, Mark. Very, very interesting.
Thank you.